Well, it is probably not accidental that Judy read my mind again and selected the perfect hymn for a topic on truth, which is It Sounds Along the Ages. Had I been thinking about it, I would have requested it, because it's the perfect metaphor for the Unitarian Universalist search for truth. It sounds along the ages, it echoes, one word resounding, and we never define it. We never tell you what the one word is. We acknowledge its truth in a variety of traditions, but we don't define it. And we leave it as a medium cool for each person to fill in. And how can we have a church that not only doesn't have a creed and doesn't have a confession and doesn't have a theology, but can sing praises to something that is by all measures unconstitutionally vague? We don't fill in any of it for you. I mean, how can we have a canvas? How can we charge anything? Because we're not giving you any answers. We're making you do the hard work of coming up with your own answers and making them provisional and being willing to test them in your life, in our lives. Oh, what is truth? Pilate famously wondered. And John 18, by the way, for those of you who only saw the movie. Pilate famously wondered, what is truth? And again, there was no answer. The context and the setting of the question was, well, is it going to be Roman truth, or is it going to be Jewish truth, or is it going to be somewhere in between Jesus truth? And it implies, as most of our Western thinking implies, that truth is unique and exclusive, and you've got two categories. You got the true, and you've got the false. You got the good, and you got the bad. That you can bifurcate our society, our lives, our political issues into right or wrong, true or false, and that's just the way it is. You're with us or you're against us. You're a religious person or you're an atheist. You're a superstitious person or you're a humanist. The theme for this week in my life seems to have been a bunch of people on both the fundamentalist side of the religious spectrum and the fundamentalist side of the humanistic spectrum saying there's no common ground. There's no common ground between the Muslim world and the Western Judeo-Christian world. There's no common ground between the religious and the rational. There's no common ground between conservatives and liberals. I think that this is nonsense. I think that the Western tradition has been that things are true or false. But that's deeply misunderstood in terms of the logic of it all. Yes, something being true or something being false is a question of, in one category, of the proposition, of how you make your argument. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Socrates is mortal is a true syllogism. But all men are immortal. Socrates is a man. Socrates is immortal is also a true syllogism. It has nothing to do with our reality as we observe it. It has to do with how things are defined, understood, and misunderstood. We are embarked in our world on great arguments about these categories where we have to buy an entire area of argument and accept it whole or reject it whole. Is the Bible true? What does the question mean? I mean, what does the question mean? I don't know what the question means. I've been faced by people who ask me if I believed in the Bible, and of course I give the response of what you mean by believe and what you mean by Bible and which translation and all of those things. But that's avoiding the issue because they're asking a different question. They're asking a question of, do I think, in fact, that there is one single immutable truth, good for all time, for all people across the ages? And my answer is no, because circumstances change. We change. Our understanding of our world changes. And there isn't one Bible. I have a different Bible that I read today than I read when I was a kid. Not necessarily that the book is different, but I'm different. I don't understand the Psalms the same as I did at 13 or 20 or 40. I understand them as being very different, and their poetry and their meaning and their truths as being very different. This is a very frightening and insecure world. And if you don't agree with that statement, somebody's cut off your cable and you don't subscribe to the newspaper. Objectively looking at the world, if you're not a little disturbed with war, with hatred, with poverty, with injustice, then you're not paying attention or you're over-medicated. And if that works for you, cool, let me know what it is. There are times when I feel like opting out also. But in truth, we don't make our world better by making it simpler. By making it us and them, the pure good guys and the pure bad guys, the enemies of the state and the patriots. The world is much more complicated than that. It's complicated like belief is complicated. It's complicated like truth is complicated. It isn't simply one statement of what the facts are. One thing that I read this week was from a Stanford PhD neuroscientist talking about just how bad and miserable and rotten religion was. And he said it was very interesting because he said his argument was there's no common ground between the rational and the religious. And he said what really surprised him was that a lot of fundamentalists were agreeing with him. Because they said, you're right, there is no common ground. You're on the wrong ground, and we fundamentalists are on the right ground, but you're right, there's nowhere in the middle for us to make common cause in the world. I think that's just wrong. I think that's just wrong. I don't know what the various labels mean. And the way that we use language and understand language and poetry, most of us don't know. Do I believe in the Bible? I have no idea what that means. Do people here believe that Western Christians worship Zeus? They do. Because Zeus became Zeus Petar, became Deus Pater, and it is our own, in Latin, Deus Pater, that is Zeus's translation. There was an intermediary step for the Darwinian missing link from Zeus Petar was Jupiter to Deus Pater. It's the same God, the same myth, the same construct, the same source of meaning or substitute for whatever it is that brought existence into being, whether it's physics or whether it's magic, whether it's poetry or whether it's science. The words are related. There's common ground all over. We look at the clash of civilizations with Islam. Muslims worship the same God the Jews do. Allah, the God, is from the Hebrew Eloah, which is the singular form of Elohim. It's the same word, the same God, the same construct. Well, Harris argues from Stanford, if we got rid of all this stuff, we would be rational. I think that's an irrational and unscientific argument, because I know that it is not either my belief or non-belief in Zeus or Allah or Eloah that makes me rational or irrational. It's my humanity. It's my need to try to express things that are not expressible, to discern order out of the chaos of experience and bring meaning to that order and bring meaning to my life. And some of that is through poetry and metaphor. With the possible exception of this sermon, the most incoherent sermon that I ever gave, in my view, was the day after my son's birth. And I'm sitting there at my first church, a then young minister, just babbling at the wonder of life, at the wonder of incarnation, of love becoming flesh, of heart attaching to that flesh in a nanosecond and being connected. Did I reject in all of those emotions my sense of reason? No. Did I reject science? Did I reject the biology? Did I reject all those lessons that I learned in 11th grade physiology? No. I understood all those, but not then and not in that moment. There is a time for every purpose under heaven, and that wasn't the time for biology. That was the time for wonder. And I just babbled with joy and with wonder. Because to me, and it's the central irony of my life, which I've mentioned before, is that I believe that the most important experiences that we have in this world, experiences of love, of connection, of transcendence, of wonder, of awe, are ineffable, that we can't put them into logical words and syllogisms, that their truths are not a function of form, but a function of how they inform and expand and open up our hearts to life and to the mystery of existence and of life. How they charge us and recharge us with wonder. And that's why this is a chance, there's a chance that this sermon will equal the birth of my son's sermon in terms of just inchoate babbling and wonder. Was I got to spend all of this time with my granddaughter. It's completely irrational. I mean, it's completely irrational that in moments there is a bonding and a word of Papa and a heart melts and a smile and the cares disappear and a sense of connection to her, to the future, to the world that reconnects me and re-energizes me to try to make a difference, to make her world a little better, a little safer. It's a reason to try to stay on the planet and to get to work. Now, I can put that into rational terms. I can put that in philosophical terms. I can put it in poetic terms. The question is, do we have room in our lives to be informed by poetry and myth, not instead of, but along with science and investigation and the use of our words in ways that actually communicate something? I think there's room in our heads and our hearts for both. There are lots of people who say, no, you got to take a religious perspective and that's going to control us. The Bible's true or it's false and it all comes crumbling down. And authority has been afraid of that forever. But in the secular world, you have the same thing. You're a strict constructionist of the Constitution or you hate America. If you start slipping away out of strict constructionism and go away from the intent of our racist, homophobic, ethnocentric founding fathers, then somehow America is going to disappear. Those are ridiculous dichotomies that we don't have to choose between. People are always driving up the fatal alternative choices to us in our world. Trying to get, it comes from cable television, trying to get you to say, well, is it this way or is it that way? Are you with us or are you against us? Which camp are you going to be in? Are you a theist or an atheist? If you're an atheist, well, my goodness, how can you live? And why wouldn't you just murder somebody if you thought you could get away with it? And if you're a theist, well, how do you explain evil and suffering? How about metaphor? True story. And by true, I mean it in the deepest sense of true. It actually happened.
To you?
To me. I was there at the time.
You weren't dreaming.
I wasn't dreaming, although life may be a dream. So, probably 30 years ago, I came and I did a workshop at this church, for the Fullerton UUs, and you were meeting downstairs in a bank building, I believe, or in the community room at a bank. And I said, let's sing a hymn. And everyone said, we don't sing hymns because we don't agree with the words. And I go, okay. Not even it sounds along the ages because what's not to agree with? But okay. So I said, let's sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. I go, why would we sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat? I said, it's really a Buddhist, it's really a Hindu song because it says, life is but a dream, and in this veil of Maya, we row across, and as we must row, let's row merrily. So, yeah, life is but a dream, and as we row across the veil of the waters of Maya. But you know something? You know something? It's true. It's true. We have a life to live. The reality of which we can discuss in terms of physics, in terms of science, in terms of poetry, and we got a row, and merrily is a good choice. Merrily is much better than grudgingly, because we don't have that much time here to do it grudgingly, but we do have to move along through it. We were sitting at the breakfast table, myself, my wife, and Derek Kiewat, former minister here and recent guest speaker. And a call came in from a friend of mine, a congregant from Studio City who has moved to Ashland, Oregon. And he said, John, sorry to bother you. You don't have any idea how good an impression I'm doing of Don Dolan right now, but if you did, you'd be very impressed. John, I hate to bother you in the morning, but do you know the fable about the dog in the manger? And I said, no, Don. What is it? He said, I don't know. I'm calling to ask if you know the fable of the dog in the manger. So I looked at Derek and I said, do you know the fable of the dog in the manger? And he said, no. And I turned to Helene. Do you know the fable of the dog in the manger? And she said, is it a real fable? What is truth? Is it a real fable? Is it real metaphor? Is it history? Is it logic? Is it science? Is it just what I believe? It's all of those things. And it seems to me that the two attitudes that we can productively have, it's not the slippery slope fear that if you admit to any relativism, you admit that anybody's idea is as good as anybody else's idea. Shakespeare's history and Fox News specials are of equal quality. You don't have to go that far. You can understand that life is Rashomon, that it is a POV, a point of view issue for most of us. I don't know any two children, siblings, that were raised in the same home. I don't know any two people who are in the same marriage. I don't know any two Unitarians who have the same religion. So, isn't there something we can learn from each other? Not convince each other of how to be, but be open to hearing in a generous manner. compassionate listening. Listening that is not listening that prepares an answer or a response, but listening that is compassionate and tries to define the intent and the heart of the person who is stammering something important. Tennessee Williams had a wonderful line about Eugene O'Neill. Said that Eugene O'Neill stammered miracles. We are all of us living in a miracle. And we all stammer the poetry, the metaphors, and science too is involved in metaphors. The atom that the Greeks had looked nothing like the atom with which we built the atomic bomb, looks nothing like the atom that people picture today. Those are pictures and metaphors. In science and poetry and religion, we are always dealing with a kaleidoscope of metaphors as we try to stammer the ineffable, as we try to react with wonder, with love and compassion to others in this world. Too often we're given the choice of yes or no, right or wrong, good or evil. But in between all of those false dichotomies, often false dichotomies, there is common ground of metaphor, of caring, of love, of a world that is shared where we have responsibilities to and for each other. Remember something very simple and logical. There's no private language. In order to communicate, there needs to be another. In order to have a language, there needs to be some kind of basic agreement on what words mean. But they never mean exactly the same thing to two people. And their meanings are not eternal and carved in stone. Even if we carve them in stone, the meanings change. And so joy, merriment, humility, and a sense of the ineffability of the very most profound and real and true experiences that we have is an attitude, I believe, at the core of how we compassionately attach ourselves to this planet, to life, and to each other. Truth, justice, humility, compassion. They're all values that don't simply reside inside, but they reside at how we see each other, how we judge each other and ourselves, and then what we do with that information and those feelings that we have.